Cedric Muhammad.
And it was very interesting. When I was down in Miami, they were discussing who controls the money in Broward County where they were.
Okay.
And, you know, it's the where the tax money goes and how it gets allocated. And he was challenging his parishioners, who do you think's on the board who controls all that? And he said, you know, it's not black people there. It's four old Jewish grandmothers. And the only reason why they're there and our people aren't there is because we don't care. We have not taken the reins. And they kid, because the numbers are there. And I think that's why the book that I have is powerful, because it lays it out. It's not anything genetic. It's not racial. It is cultural. And this book is powerful, and it does change lives. And I've had a lot of email, and a lot of people come to me and tell me this. And it's a simple book to read, and the seven keys are pretty straightforward. And that's where I see it. You know, Jewish, you know, half of the Jewish population is intermarried at this point. But the seven keys, the culture lives on. And I think that's what the message of the book is.
Well, now here's... I'm so glad we're having this conversation, because I think it gets to the root of how a better relationship can be worked out economically, or in the through the economic lens, I should say.
Sure.
Now, I do share your opinion, and if you read my blogs, Steve, you know that I believe a lot of our barriers are self-imposed.
Absolutely.
I'm very hard on us. But there is a legacy of discrimination, and there was a period where, as you know, blacks were prevented from entering into certain industries. Now, the Jewish community presents that same history. Mm-hmm. But what Russell Simmons says, which I find is interesting, is he's open about the fact he credits Jewish business persons who had a monopoly on certain industries, fashion, you know, relatively speaking, as mentoring him. He calls them rabbis, and he credits them with letting him in a door that had been previously closed. So there is a degree, I think, that our lack of economic progress is self-imposed and perpetuated through some really bad habits, etc. But there's also an argument that can be made that does it not require someone opening a door for you? Or are you saying that the Jewish experience has never been to let anyone or ask anyone to open a door? It's been to create one where no one existed?
Often it is they've created a door where none existed. And through the, you know, knowledge and power and money and entrepreneurial efforts, they created these areas. Like, for instance, what would possess somebody who's a new immigrant in this country to come to Pennsylvania to go work in the coal mines? You know, a lot of Polish Americans did. Jewish Americans wouldn't do that. That was not their idea of success. But culturally, that's where they went. They were culturally workers that were working in the mines, hard labor, steel mills, all that type of thing. That wasn't an area that Jewish people were gravitated to. Agriculture, no, they weren't attracted to that. They were, as a tradition, entrepreneurs, shopkeepers, professors, lawyers, business people, that type of thing. And then when it came to the factories in New York to create clothing, they developed that industry. The ready-to-wear industry was created by Jewish people in New York City. So it wasn't something that they were invited to or mentored into. They created it out of whole cloth. Hollywood was a Jewish invention. All the major studios were started by Jewish people. So why do you think today, even today, that when you look at the studio heads and all the people down from people who, you know, write the scripts to shoot the movies, producers, directors, are all Jewish? It's a legacy of an industry that they created.
Yeah, and I think... go ahead, Stephen, please.
Yeah, but then when somebody comes into it, if it's Russell, he's going to bring other people that he's going to mentor in. And so an industry that's older becomes more diffuse. You go into banking. Regular banking is traditionally a WASP industry. But when it gets into investment banking, raising capital, trading of securities, that type of thing. That's a Jewish industry. Why? Because they were excluded from that. So when you look at Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, all those different companies that have come became extremely successful, and that's not only the owners, but the traders, all the different people that are in all the securities industry, very Jewish, is because they were the ones who created it. And that's why there's a legacy to that.
Right. And the reason why I really appreciate what you said is in my new book, I have a chapter devoted strictly to group economics and kinship systems. And I think what's important for both sides to understand, and I don't know the degree to which the Jewish community appreciates this. As I mentioned, my Caribbean family does not necessarily appreciate it. Is in the Black community, there is no thousand-year legacy like that. So,
right.
So when the door is shut on you, you do have this entrepreneurship by necessity mentality that I think is actually a human trait, and I think it's universally dispersed. That, you know, when suffering brings about more thinking and it causes you to take risks, and that's how entrepreneurs are created. However, what the Black American community missed was, because of what happened with slavery, the total stripping and breakup of the family as the first source of capital, and these types of traditions and legacies that, and even to a degree, Native Americans have it. It may only be six people left in a nation or a tribe, but they still call themselves that. Now, let me read a question from a viewer, if you don't mind, Stephen.
Sure.
Okay. Prince Akbar, he's from Chicago. He's one of our regulars. He says, Cedric, if the guest, referring to you, Stephen, is honest enough to admit the Jewish community's sensitivity that his own book might affect anti-Semitism because of articles related to Madoff or successful Jews, why does there seem to be an apathy amongst the Jewish press to popularizing anti-Black or negative Black artists? It seems a strongly double standard. I have a comment that may clarify that. Are you able to understand that, Stephen?
Not really.
Okay, here's what I think. Prince Akbar is very articulate, but here's what I think he's saying. Whether it was through whatever the cause was, as you note, there's a Jewish concentration in certain fields. It's obvious. You know, you put this on the back of your book, so it's no secret.
And
you explain why this is in your book. Mm-hmm. Now, one of those areas I think he's referring to may be filmmaking or Hollywood, and I think you talk about some of the history of that industry. First, to answer this question, could you just give the Jewish experience in Hollywood as you may chronicle it in your book, and then I'll ask you the question as it relates to how Black people are depicted by certain filmmakers who may be Jewish.
Well, it's in the book. In New York City, there were a lot of movie houses. There was burlesque. There were those type of emporiums. And as the movie industry, at the very, very beginning, at the turn of the century, those houses needed something to play. And so the Jewish owners of these houses that had burlesque, which is in those days, it was a combination of, you know, it was talent, it was singing, there was theater, all those theaters. When the beginning of a film began, those houses required something to be played. And those Jewish owners were some of the first ones that moved to California because of the environment there, and created the first houses to make films. And it was just an evolutionary thing from New York City. Is that clear?
Yeah, so a company like MGM?
Right. It started in New York City in owners of theaters.
Okay, I'm going to help you out, Stephen. Everybody, there's a whole section in Stephen's book called The Entertainment Industry Motion Pictures. You can read about this now. Okay, now, you and I touched on this in our interview 7 years ago, Stephen, but I'm going to tie it into Prince Akbar's question, which is, now, who bears the burden of responsibility? Is it the talent provider, which would be the Black actress or the Black actor or the Black rapper or the Black singer, who is espousing or who is the embodiment of the negative image through their creative work? Or is it the financial backer, the business entity, the entrepreneur who may be distributing it?
Who's responsible for it? Well, in this case, you know, there's two people to it. So I think it's almost self-perpetuating. And at a certain, you know, a certain point, there has to be somebody who cries uncle and says, I'm not going to do this anymore.
I agree. And I think it has to be from both sides. And I think what, and as you know, with my background in the music industry, there was no Jewish person that held a gun to any rapper that I saw.
Were okay? they writing those lyrics?
No, the Jewish person was not writing the lyrics.
Now,
go ahead, Steve.
And I'm just going back to Bill Cosby.
Sure.
I mean, he describes it. There was nobody out there that was doing this type of show that he did that portrayed black families in this way and showed a role model. Today, I mean, it would be inconceivable when you and I spoke 7 years ago that we would be today in the United States with a black president of the United States. Inconceivable.
Inconceivable to me. But I even predicted McCain boldly on this show.
Yeah. But it would be inconceivable. But it's occurred. But it occurred because now people see that the ceiling is broken. There are role models there, and everybody has to be participating.
But let me bring it back to give you this scenario, because I agree with you. And I was the one making the point that, you know, no one caused any rapper that I saw. No Jewish person was responsible. Our Jewish lawyer would actually cringe. I actually saw, you know, Jewish members of the music business wondering why we would call ourselves the N-word. That's real. Now let me say this, though, because I want to give the other side and ask you how you think I should feel or someone should feel. Now, I was in a record label office with someone that we considered a friendly business partner. He was Jewish, young member of the Jewish community, very respected in the music business. And my group, Wu-Tang, we were going over to Germany to do a tour. So this person who we've known for years and broken bread together, had fun, made money together, he says to us, he says, when you go over there, why don't you drop a bomb on them? So I looked at him and I said, why? What do you mean? He said, well, they just killed 6 million of my people. So I looked at him and I said, well, while we're doing that over there, why don't you do one here for what happened to black people through the slave trade, etc.? And I think that is what the problem is. It's that both sides have a certain ignorance of each other's reality, and there's a certain manipulation on both sides, I think, as it relates to that ignorance. On the black side, there's a somewhat of a victim role that I think is played and manipulated, like, ooh, my knees keep hurting, so
yes,
I need help, you know what I mean? And then I think on the Jewish community, there's Jewish people who are making money with blacks that are less knowledgeable than them in business, have less of a family tradition, and they know this. And again, I just bring it back to the Caribbean, because the West Indian blacks know this about black Americans, and it's hard for them to understand. So how do you said somebody has to cry uncle, but how do you mediate that? You know, is it through works like your book or our conversation, et cetera?
I think it's through interaction. I mean, the more that we talk about it, and here is this path. If you want to go and continue the path that you're in, fine. But here is a different way. And that's what the book describes. And the whole idea that you don't support your own community, or that you're going to, it's absolutely inconceivable that I would hear lyrics from Jewish composers that would be anti-Semitic, that would call other Jews by anti-Semitic names. I mean, is that a legacy from slavery? It may be. But obviously, I think it may be turning around now, but I don't know. But it's not something, it has to be at a certain point, the black community has to say, this is no longer acceptable. And that can't be imposed from the outside.
Well, Steve, we could go on forever on this. Please take a couple minutes to promote the book. I can assure you, right now I'm looking at comments. Four people have ordered your book since we've been talking. What do you want people to get out of this book, the new revised edition? How can they contact you, stay in touch, etc.?
Well, the book is available on Amazon and a lot of bookstores. It's an easy read. It lays out the seven principles very easily. It describes in every conceivable area of human endeavor, there are a lot of Jewish successful people there. Why are they there? Because of the seven principles. It's not genetic. It is cultural. And if something is cultural, that's something that can be adopted by any single individual in a lot of circumstances. When the Jewish community came, was fleeing the Holocaust, and under the worst circumstances, it was following these seven principles and these secrets, so to speak, that has contributed to their success. And I saw it in action in Miami at the New Birth Baptist Church. They saw it, they embraced it, and he wanted me there, not because he couldn't read from the book and tell his parishioners. They wanted to hear another voice, a voice from the outside tell them, this is how it's done, this is the way to go. And that's why I'm promoting the book. I believe that it has a great message for a lot of people. And it's not expensive. It's on Amazon. I think people should get it and pass it around.
Well, I do too. It has my full endorsement. One of the most profound books and discussions that I've had has been with you. It's documented by the way this has resonated. I want to thank you, and you are no stranger. You can come back anytime you want. If you want to talk about MBAs and give a quick online MBA course, we'd be grateful. But Steve, thank you so much. Do you want people to be able to contact you by email, or is there any way they can reach you?
There's an email. It's Jewish7S.
Still the same email. The same email in the book, huh?
Email in the book.
One more time, I cut you off. Go ahead.
It's Jewish7S. At juno.com, juno.com.
Stephen, I thank you so much. I'll be in touch with some follow-up emails. I'm sure there'll be some great feedback. And thank you for taking the time out. And 7 years is too long, but when you're in tune on a subject like this, it's almost like we never stop talking.
Excellent. Thank you.
Take
care,
Stephen.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. Stephen Silberg, everyone. Steven Silberger, author of The Jewish Phenomenon, Seven Keys to the Enduring Wealth of a People. If you have any comments, send them in. I'm going to head into hour number four, Wyclef interview when we come back. Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. You know what it is. And I don't want to hear from anyone. You could have sent in a comment. I don't want 20,000 comments after Steve is gone. But I thank Prince Akbar for posing the question that he did when he did. Chapter 3 of my book, The Entrepreneurial Secret, covers a lot of the same ground. If you want to go further as it relates to the Jewish community, the Chinese community, West Indian, African culture, etc. We'll be right back.
You are a communist.
No, you're not.
No, Mr. Bringier. I am not a communist. I'm Marxist-Leninist.
You are not a communist, but you are a Marxist-Leninist. What is the difference?
Cedric Muhammad. You are tuned in to The Watchman. Cedric Muhammad. The Black Coffee Channel.
Black Coffee Channel.
good for man. The working cage has hit the town. He drinks his wages. Your friend, your sweat. But did you notice? You ain't getting your friend, your sweat. But did you notice? Not getting anywhere. Don't you ever stop? Long enough to start. Take your car out of that gear. Don't you ever stop? Long enough to start. Get your car out of that gear. Call the Marx, a fire and anger. Steam to the jacket at the 7-Eleven. Marx was good, but he had sense. On the game, they was murdered by the other team. Went on to win 50-0. You can be true, you can be false. You'll be given the same reward. Socrates, a Millhouse Nixon, both went the same way through the kitchen. Plato, the Greek, or in thin thin. Who's more famous to the billion millions? Who's black?
Cedric Mahomet.
Black Katrina sucks up Frenchie.
To the Watchman, Cedric Mahomet, on the Black Coffee Channel.
The latest now on the West African nation of Guinea. The military junta has pulled out of talks in neighboring Burkina Faso, addressing the crisis in their nation. They said they were suspending the talks until their leader, Dadis Camara, returns to work. Well, the junta also had strong words for France, accusing Paris of involvement in the apparent attempt to assassinate Camara last week.
The accusation is serious, but the Guinean junta is sticking with its story. It's accusing France of having participated in an assassination attempt against their leader, Moussa Dadis Camara. The junta spokesman accused French Foreign Minister Bernard Kouchner, as well as the French Secret Services, of having prepared a coup d'etat. Contacted by France 24, a spokesman said Guinea would furnish proof.
The time has come for the international community to know that the French secret services are mixed up in the story of the attempt against Guinea, in particular against the president of the country.
It's not the first time Idrissa Sharif has pointed the finger at France, the colonial power in Guinea, for attempting to destabilize the country. But he cited the confessions of two people recently arrested, confessions which implicate France in the assassination attempt. The French Foreign Ministry forcibly denied Sharif's claims and called for a democratic transition in Conakry.
There's no time to waste in sterile controversies. It distracts attention from the principal objectives. We should turn the page in favor of peaceful and democratic transition ending in elections.
On the 3rd of December, Camara was wounded in the head, suspected to have been shot by his right-hand man, Toumba Diakité, who's still on the run. Transferred to Morocco for medical treatment, Camara is reportedly in good condition and will speak to the nation soon, according to his spokesman.
Okay, it's my pleasure at this time to introduce the individual that I think may embody more of what I call a hip-hoppreneur, someone who's comfortable not just as an artist or as a business person, but as a leader. Wyclef, how are you, brother? Wyclef Jean.
What's up, my family? How are you?
Man, it's an honor, you know, and I meant every word that I said in listening to your latest project. There's no doubt in my mind that you live up to that. And let me just start there, you know, for those... this will be a good entry point for you. The new mixtape album, From the Hut to the Projects to the Mansion, yes. Presented by DJ Drama, right?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, let me ask you this now. When I first heard about it, I got excited. I initially saw it as a brilliant marketing strategy, businessman that you are, to set up the next project, you know, as a contrast, because that work is going to be broader. But as I listened carefully to From the Hut to the Projects to the Mansion, to me it was almost like, not that you were closing a chapter, but it sounded like you were making a definitive statement on who you are.
Yeah.
So to date, has there been a more definitive album than this?
No, I think this right here is the most definitive thus far, in the sense of the last time I was that literal was the score. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I did the score with the Fugees, I felt that I had to address certain things. as far as just who the individual was, you know what I mean? And I felt like it was important to do this album to address who the individual is. So past all of the success of, you know, writing the songs for Shakira, breaking world records and all types of stuff on the charts, you know, and still being relevant and transcending generation to generation, the basis of what I do comes from the Booger basement of 1993-94. So it was important before moving to the next chapter of whatever I'm doing that the kids still know that that rebel tone of hip-hop is still what embodies me to be. When you look at me, you're like, man, this dude's a real dude. It's because of that cloak that I was cut from.
Well, I mean, I read it right. I mean, it comes across loud and clear. And let me tell you, how much of a supporter I am. Uh-huh. I went on Wikipedia. I looked under the Toussaint Louverture official entry.
Yeah.
And your album was not in there. Your name was not in there, brother. So now you can look under the cultural references. Your album is officially now listed under the history.
That's dope, man. He's a man.
So I had to put in mine, brother. But listen, let me ask you this, because this is a deep thing with me working with other artists. Did you write the interludes?
I mean, with me, I always write all of my interludes, but I'm going to tell you it's deep about this.
Okay.
Me and Drama had a conversation, and I said, Drama, on this one, you're going to come different because they're expecting you to just be like, Drama, Gangsta Grill, you know what I'm saying? And the thing about me is I knew Drama sounds to me like a preacher.
Exactly.
Like his voice, and I knew he had so much to say. So Drama was like, yo, man, just send me the records, you know what I'm saying? Then when he heard what I was doing, you know, he was like, yo, I got to just sit and write something for this. This is the first time, you know what I'm saying? I would say that every word that you hear Drama is saying in interlude is something that he got inspired from by listening to the music, which is big, you know what I mean?
Yo, that's huge. And I had to, so that's Toussaint Drama over there. I mean, you have to bestow that upon him. You all really channeled that energy, and I have to say, man, that's exemplary. That's almost like Quincy and Michael. I'm really impressed by that, man.
Yeah, so he definitely went in, because, you know, all of my albums, I always do all my interludes,
right.
You know what I mean? And this one, when Drama heard the music, I said, you know, I said, Drama, when people look back in history, you know, they're going to look at us, and they're going to be like, when they got together, what did they do? And I was like, it has to be something historic, and he said the same. Where people can just, you know, look back and say, wow, you know what I mean? That's what these guys was on, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you told them there was one witness that really felt the energy.
Cedric Muhammad.